welcome to the Pastor's Cut podcast for the week of May 5th, 2024. We're in our loneliness series. Let's say hi to everyone. Brad, hi.
Greetings.
How are you, friend?
Not bad at all.
So as I was recording, Fort Gibson just turned 200. You're part of a big musicale there.
This is very true.
How did it go?
Quite swimmingly.
Okay.
People turned out in droves, and the cast hit it out of the park. I'm considering changing all their middle names to Ruth.
Nice.
Because they hit it out of the park. See, and we're talking about Ruth today. So see how it segued there.
You did a great job.
That was a Darren Spoo segue right there.
Yeah. They both liked peanuts.
Yeah.
Babe Ruth and...
Oh.
It's a peanut connection. Further. We shouldn't often play baseball. But
we should have eaten...
Baby Ruth.
Baby Ruth's today.
Oh, Baby Ruth.
Yeah. Like Baby Ruth. Well, so Fort Gibson turned 200. The United States is about to turn 250. So instead of our bicentennial, it's another word. I saw it for the first time last week. Uh-huh. Don't know what that word is, okay. But I'll look it up here in a minute. But well, I remember in Texas
was a good word.
When Texas turned 150, it was the sesquicentennial.
Yes,
and I never had heard that word before in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
And
also known as the Bigfoot centennial.
There you go, the Sasquatch centennial. Mm-hmm. Boy, we're just. We just need to cut this short today, don't we?
Yeti keeps going.
Yeah. Okay, Marissa, how are you doing?
I'm doing great,
thank
you.
How are all your kids doing, your
daughters? All 57 of them are great.
Every time I contact you, hey, Marissa, need to go to the hospital, check on somebody. You go, I'm at an event at my kid's school.
Yeah, you always call me between 3 and 4.
Is that...
That is the time when you call.
Well, usually it's because I'm ready to go home.
Yeah, and you're like, will Marissa do it, maybe?
Marissa will do it. I'll outsource
Marissa's
this.
In the pickup line.
I'll delegate.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, anyway.
But we do have Adeline's musical is tomorrow night. She's doing Beauty and the Beast at Carver Middle School.
All right.
It will definitely be as good as Vivian.
Are you sure about that?
No, it will not be. Okay. I'm excited to see it because part of the fun is seeing how horrible it is.
That is.
But she's going to be great.
But you know what? You need to go through that.
Yeah.
Every great actor or actress or singer at some point had the cringeworthy performance.
Yes, that's middle school theater is the best.
It is absolutely the best. Okay, so it is semi-quincentennial or the sestercentennial.
Sestercentennial. All right.
That's a lot of syllables. Semi-quincentennial or sestercentennial. Hmm. So one of those is going to take over our vocabulary here in the next few years as we get close to the 250th anniversary of our great nation. Okay, so we're in the book of Ruth. Now, Dave had to step out and take a phone call, so he may step back in here in just a minute. We're going to just see how that goes. Although, since he didn't step back in, I'm thinking maybe he's gone. Or maybe he's having trouble getting through. Anyway, we'll see. But whether it's two of us or three of us, we're going to handle the Book of Ruth, our continuing teaching on the idea of loneliness. Loneliness is that gap between the intimacy we want and the intimacy we have. Mm-hmm. Several different reasons for that gap. For some people, it's a health issue. For some people, it's a circumstantial issue. And I don't know if there's any emotion as isolating from other people as grief.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marissa, how do you want to handle this? I put the messages just down as all of Ruth chapter 1. Should we handle the whole chapter, or as you studied it, what did you walk away with? What do you think we ought to handle?
Goodness, I think there's things all throughout this chapter, but maybe the...
What's that song?
That's hold music. Ruth 1 through 5.
Okay, let's handle that first.
Sure.
I tell you what, let me do this. I'll do the setup, Ruth 1 through 5.
Okay.
Because I kind of like the setup, and then I'll let you get to the punchline.
Sounds great.
Okay. So I'm just going to read this and comment as we go. So in the days of when the judges ruled, and right before this book is the book of Judges, that statement used 4 times in the book is... In the day of the judges, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Mm-hmm. So it was not a particularly strong period for Israel. It was that period between Joshua and the first king of Israel, which would be Saul. And so it's kind of the dark ages of the Hebrew nation. And it seems that with everyone doing what was right in their own eyes, here's just another case study, or that's kind of the implication. Here's just somebody else making it up as they go along.
Mm-hmm.
There was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, by the way, this was the same town that Jesus 1,500 years later, not quite that much, 1,200 years later would be born. So a man from Bethlehem, together with his wife and two sons, they went to live for a while in the country of Moab. This was a neighboring nation. Now, we think about moving across state lines. That's no big deal. Okay, I'm going to move from Oklahoma to Texas. Doesn't that sound good to everybody? Doesn't that sound good?
Yes.
And there was crickets. We'll say that. There was crickets. But here in the ancient world, it was less less akin to moving states and more like when a basketball player, let's say Kevin Durant were to leave the Oklahoma City Thunder and go to a different team. I mean, what do those Thunder fans do? They consider him a traitor, right? I'd still hear people talk about that today. So by moving across national boundaries, you're almost considering like abandoning your own people. They went to live in the nation of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, which is almost ironic because his name means God is king. And that, by the way, that would be one of the themes of this book, that God is in charge and working even when you don't see him. His wife's name was Naomi. And the name of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. And they were Ephraimites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. Now, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both of her sons, Mahlon and Chilion, also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and without her husband. Mm-hmm. So here we see a woman who is no doubt filled with grief. Not only has her husband died, but her two sons had also died. And she still had two daughter-in-laws. We're going to see what happens with that in just a minute. Okay, so Marissa, why don't you take the story from here?
Sure. You want me to read the scripture there?
If you want to, you think you ought to, go for it. Tell you what, read as far as you want and stop and make some comments. Or if you want to read the whole thing, you can do that too.
Well, one thing that I would like to mention when you said that he left his homeland is that not only was he leaving his homeland, but in the ancient Near East, your God was very much tied to the land.
That's right.
So Elimelech was, in a way, escaping God when he left Judah, when he left Israel.
And we know that's not true.
Right.
But people had not yet kind of woken up to that fact that this is really the God of the universe that we're talking about. Right. And it's always a good reminder. Let's make sure that we live by faith and not by superstition.
And this is one of the great themes of Ruth, is that God was with them in Moab.
That's
that,
right.
That there was no division of his power there. So, okay, I'll take it up with verse 6. When Naomi heard in Moab that the Lord had come to the aid of the people by providing food for them, she and her daughters-in-law prepared to return home from there. With her two daughters-in-law, she left the place where she had been living and set out on the road that would take them back to the land of Judah. Then Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's home. May the Lord show you kindness as you have shown kindness to your dead husbands and to me. May the Lord grant that each of you will find rest in the home of another husband." Then she kissed them goodbye, and they wept aloud and said to her, "We will go back with you to your people." But Naomi said, "Return home, my daughters. Why would you come with me? Am I going to have any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me, even if I had a husband tonight and they gave birth to sons, would you wait until they grew up? Would you remain unmarried for them? No, my daughters, it is more bitter for me than for you, because the Lord's hand has turned against me."
Okay, so I'm going to interrupt Marissa right here. This is actually a Middle Eastern style of negotiation. It's not just Naomi saying, "Daughters, go back home." She actually says it three times, "Go back." And again, she says, "Return." And one more time, she says, "Return." Mm-hmm. It's and still in some Middle Eastern cultures today, when a man divorces his wife verbally, he has to tell her three times, "I divorce you, I divorce you, I divorce you." So there's some negotiation. There's some back and forth going on here. She is grief-stricken. I believe she is sincere in her desire for her daughter-in-laws to return back home. But she is, in essence, releasing them. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, so, I think as a woman who was a refugee to Moab, she understood the need to stay with your support system, to stay with your system, your family when you're in grief.
That's right.
She had been removed from that and had to mourn her husband by herself. So she was telling her daughters, you know, not only is there hope for your future, but this is where your people are. This is where you're loved. This is where you're supported. I don't know what the future is for you in Judah as two Moabite women, two women living under a curse.
And she literally, and we could, let's not get into Levirate marriage. That's a whole nother discussion. Mm-hmm. But she literally had nothing left that she could do for her two daughters-in-laws. So thank you for letting me interrupt, Marissa. I shan't do it again.
Thank you. No, thank you. Where are we at, 14?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. At this, they wept aloud again. Then Orpah kissed her mother-in-law goodbye, but Ruth clung to her. "Look," said Naomi, "your sister-in-law is going back to her people and her gods. Go back with her." But Ruth replied, "Don't urge me to leave you or to turn back from you. Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord deal with me, be it ever so severely, if even death separates you and me." When Naomi realized that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped urging her.
So let's talk about Orpah for just a moment. Mm. And by the way, it is a derivative of her name that we have a very famous person named after her.
Right.
Oprah. It was a misspelling of that name. Mm. That's a little piece of trivia that I would...
It is, yeah.
...might mention in my community group if I were teaching
misspelled it. On her birth certificate, but she was meant to be Orpah.
She was meant to be Orpah, and she turned out to be Oprah, and the world was never the same again. So everything she does makes sense. There's nothing wrong with Orpah. She makes a rational decision. It makes sense. But as a counterpoint to her, there's Ruth, and what Ruth does doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And if there's one thing that could be applauded about Ruth, it is her adventuresome faith, that literally she has a faith that says, I know it doesn't make good sense, but this is the right thing to do. And we see that same characteristic in her throughout this book, but especially here at this moment with Naomi.
Right. Do you want me to talk about it, or
sure.
do you want me to keep going with Scripture?
No, I want you to talk about it.
Yeah, we are meant to be in community with other people. That's what keeps coming up again and again in our podcast and your sermons. But God gives us different people in our life for different seasons. And that doesn't mean that, just like you said, you know, Orpah made a good decision for her. There's a description of our support systems that says that, you know, there's friendships that we have that are like leaves. Have you heard of this before?
I have not. I love the way this is going.
You know, there's these beautiful, lush green leaves, but they're only there for a season. And when things get cold, things get rough, when things change in our life, those leaves fall away and they fall out of our lives. And that can really, that can frustrate us and make us feel abandoned and make us feel even more isolated and lonely. And even, you know, angry that those leaves weren't with us during our time of grief. But, you know, the Lord brought those people into our lives to beautify our lives for a season. And just because they're not with us for this next season doesn't mean that they were not a positive force in our life. That, you know, it didn't mean that Naomi and Orpah didn't have a beautiful relationship. She was her daughter. But in this new season, there would be new people, new support for that she would encounter, and there would be new people that she would find that would not leave. So, you know, Ruth did not give up on her. She was that person who is a friend for all seasons. They're rare, but they're out there, and we need to appreciate them so much when we find them. And Dave is doing some parkour to get back to the mic.
I'm impressed. I couldn't do that.
A little like Tom Cruise trying to squeeze around some stuff.
Like, there you go. We get some laser beams in here.
That's what we need.
But there are always going to be friendships because they are, you know, we're all broken people. We're all making this up as we go along. There's going to be friendships that we have that when things get rough, they're just not going to be able to meet the needs and meet the expectations that we have for them. You know, there's a writer named Clarissa Mole who kind of describes this situation where when she was going through grief after the loss of her husband, you know, she called up a friend and she wanted to kind of vent and just pour out her heart to this friend. And the friend like immediately interrupted her and started trying to fix things. And she started kind of grieving this friendship. You know, they were very close. And why isn't she there for me? And then she had this moment of self-awareness where Clarissa realized that she was asking her friend to do something that was completely outside of her gifting. She was always kind of this type A fix-it person. And there would be other people in her life that would be able to be comforters to her. That you know, when she had these millions of things to do that needed fixing, that friend was right there by her side. But we need to have kind of an understanding that we need all sorts of people in our lives.
Yeah, sometimes friends, we have them for a lifetime. Sometimes we have them for a season. And God brings different friends to us for particular circumstances. Now, here's where I'm going with this message. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about loneliness up to this point in the teaching series almost in a defensive posture, that if you're experiencing this, you know, here's some things that you can do to defend yourself against loneliness. Mm-hmm. This particular message is going to be more about going on the offensive, because we can look at Naomi and we mourn that she mourns, and we understand the loneliness that comes with that, But really, as I teach through this, I'm going to go more from the standpoint of Ruth. Mm-hmm. What can we do as friends, as family members, as those who accompany other people in grief and all kinds of situations to go on the offensive and help eliminate the loneliness of other people? And we'll get to some practical things here in just a moment. But this is perhaps one of the most beautiful statements in the entire Older Testament, where you go, I will go. Mm-hmm. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, there I will die, and there I will be buried. And it's this idea of, I'm going to put this in Oklahoma vernacular, I'm going to say this like we would in Fort Gibson. I ain't letting you go.
Right.
Okay. And as we deal with so much loneliness in our world, we can become almost too self-focused about it. Mm-hmm. But perhaps what we need to do is say, who else is lonely and who do I need to hang on to mm-hmm. in this? So, mm-hmm. Dave, you've been strangely silent throughout the entire podcast.
it's like you weren't even here.
Out of the room or something. Goodness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take it. Everything's okay for the time being.
Everything is okay. Okay. She's no longer able to get other people sick. So now it's just a matter of her. She was outside in the rash as she was running around, started to flare up. So she's itchy. That's what it came down to.
Okay.
I know. Poor girl.
Hey, all those of you remember having little kids and you get the call from the school. For us, I got a call from the school once that not only my son had lost a tooth at school, he pulled it out, but he'd also pulled out a couple of other kids' teeth at school.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Now I'm expert.
I won't tell you which kid that is, but it was Caleb. He actually, I never had to pull a single tooth with him. He pulled out all his own teeth, not at the same time. But then he was like, here, let me help you out, Jimmy, and started yanking other kids' teeth out. That was great.
Oh, my goodness.
Marissa, you ever got that good phone call from school? What'd you get?
For sure. And then there's always the debate with the nurse. It's like, well, if you want to come get them, it's like, do you think I should come get them?
Do I have to?
If I don't, am I a bad parent? Because it sounds like they're good. I don't know.
Do you have a clean room there you could just keep them in?
Oh, goodness.
Okay, so we're talking about going on the offensive here. So, mm-hmm. Dave, since you've been quiet, anything you want to add up to this point?
So I've missed all of the discussion. So I don't know. Did you guys talk about the names of everyone and their original meanings? Did you even dive into that? Okay,
you missed that. Well, we really touched Ellie Melick. Why don't you touch the other ones?
So much of the early part of the conversation in the Hebrew text revolves around maybe identity mm-hmm. and finding identity in God. And this family had an identity firmly rooted in Yahweh. So even their names meant stuff. Elimelech, you already talked about. Naomi.
It's Ellie Melick.
Ellie Melick.
It's Elimelech. Whatever.
Well,
it's Ellie. They're voting me down. Listen.
I've always heard it pronounced one way. And it's biblical pronunciations, it's always the first way you've heard it. It's never actually the fact of how you pronounce
it. Here's the deal. They would have pronounced it in a completely different
right,
way.
Right, yeah. Yes. You wouldn't recognize what we're saying.
So nobody really knows.
Elimelech. Go ahead.
So Naomi's name means God is sweetness. Mm-hmm. Mm. It's kind of interesting with her than flipping and saying, no, my name is bitter, not sweetness.
Yeah.
The first son, Mahlon, his name means tender-hearted, and Chili, kind of like chewy, chili. His name means finding perfection or completeness in a relationship with Yahweh.
Oh, a lot of great stuff there.
A lot of great stuff just there.
And what does Ruth's name mean?
So, I know. The commentary I read didn't find any significance in the names of the foreigners.
I did find Ruth's meaning, but I forgot it, so I didn't write it down.
Right.
So,
well, when Naomi changes her name to Mara,
yes,
you know, grief can so often become our identity when we're stuck in grief, and she tries very hard to make grief her identity. You know, the bitterness and the grief has just obfuscated her vision from what her name mm-hmm. really means, the sweetness of the Lord. And it all comes kind of from Exodus 15, you know, when the people of the Hebrew people came to the spring that was bitter, the Marah spring. And there's this miraculous event that's very quiet where Moses drops the piece of wood into the spring to make it sweet and make it palatable again. And it's understood as this miracle of God's presence, where God is saying that in your bitterness, I am still with you. I'm still present. I'm here to heal you. And then God takes on a new name at that spring, Jehovah Rapha, which means the God who heals. So even in her saying, my name is bitterness, which you'll see later throughout the book, no one ever calls her bitter. God has placed amazing people around Naomi to say, that is not your identity. That's not who you are to us. The women of Bethlehem never call her Mara. Ruth never calls her Mara, always reminding her that you are still a person of joy.
Keep going. Keep going.
We've got a little bit of a beat going in the background there. It's kind of fun.
You got to, I don't know if
we got to hop to the beat.
Will people on the podcast hear that?
No.
Oh, I was about to say, just
edit. There's so much for Brad to edit out in this episode. Man alive. So like,
you get to keep teaching, but you've got to wrap it.
Yeah, right, right. Also.
Okay. Actually, I did find the meaning of Ruth's name. It means semi-quincentennial.
Nice. Ah, everything is full circle.
You know what? You know how you associate words with songs?
Yes.
And that is a teaching moment? I think if we could like all line up and do like The Lion Sleeps Tonight and do Elimelech, Elimelech.
Oh, nice.
Then Darren will never forget how it's pronounced again.
That's right. That's it. I'm a failure. So I do want to, let's get to some application here. please, struggle. Lord, let there be application.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You know what, Brad? We're going to let you edit what you want to edit or not edit what you don't edit.
I think we just hit go.
Why not?
Lord.
So there is a little bit of debate on when she returned back to Bethlehem, the women see her and go, is that Naomi? Mm-hmm. And either they're shocked at her condition or they're gossiping about her condition. And I, for the purpose of this teaching series, I'm just going to assume, or for this message, that probably they were downgrading Naomi just a little bit, that they were shocked. You moved off to Moab. Yeah, you kind of get what you deserve. You abandoned God. He abandoned you. And that would have been the theology of the day, so I don't think that's far-fetched. But they were shocked. But whatever they said and whatever they did not help Naomi. And in fact, it probably just made things worse. So what did Ruth do? And what I'm going to do as a practical application of this, we may want to put this in the pastor's cut for people to explore. But in 1 Thessalonians 5:14, Paul says, "We urge you, brothers and sisters, warn those who are idle and disruptive, encourage the disheartened, help the weak, be patient with everyone." And there are five verbs in that one sentence: to urge, to warn, to encourage, to help, and to be patient. And I think if we were to come alongside people who are lonely, and what I'll do in my teaching on that morning is I'm going to take each one of those verbs and just apply them. You know, maybe there's a person in your life that you need to warn them. You know, hey, what you're doing, sitting at home by yourself every night watching TV, is not God's best for you. You know, and you need to kind of prod them a little bit. Or maybe you need to encourage them. Maybe you need to help them. They can't see the situation they're in. Maybe you just need to be patient with them for the time being. It's not going to be a quick fix. Loneliness never is. But I'm going to explore each one of these five verbs and say, here's how we can say, or here's how we can live out what Ruth does, where you go, I will go, where you stay, I will stay. It's a very practical application of this. But let me bounce this to you guys. If you and all of us have had friends who are lonely, if you know somebody who's lonely, what do you do? What's a practical way? And if I were teaching this in community group, I would just say, let's give some practical counsel on how we serve other people when they're lonely. Marissa, what would you say?
Well, when we are lonely, we kind of like to wallow in our loneliness sometimes. Yes. And sometimes it's just that we don't know, we don't understand, and we don't know how we're going to be received by other people. We don't know when we're going to be overwhelmed by a situation. So it's safer to stay by yourself than to enter into community and risk being hurt by other people and by situations. What's beautiful about Ruth's story is how insistent she was that, Naomi, I know that you don't have anything to offer. I'm not asking you to offer me anything. You know, and Ruth also was in immense grief at this time. Her husband had been lost. Yeah, she had the secondary losses of she wasn't going to have kids. Her whole future had been taken away from her at this moment. But she recognized in Naomi a need for friendship, that this is a woman who was going to potentially become stuck in her grief and not be able to move past it. So Ruth was able to recognize that need for friendship. She recognized that need in herself as well. So she was insistent, you are not a lost cause. I love you. You are worth pursuing. You're a woman of value. And you know, if you have a friend who's declining invitations, who's maybe not taking calls, who's, you know, you keep trying, keep offering those invitations.
Be patient.
Be patient and don't forget them.
And I would say you stumbled onto something I thought was really good a moment ago that, you know, well, what did you say? It was really, really good. Oh, yeah.
You stumbled on it like you didn't mean to be profound?
Oh, I don't. Marissa's always profound, but, you know, Naomi had nothing to offer. Mm-hmm. And so what Ruth communicated is, I don't want anything from you. And right. I would say, especially those who deal with leadership loneliness. Mm-hmm. I talked to one leader not too long ago that and she said this. She said, the only time people talk to me is when they want something. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yep, I kind of know what that feels like sometimes. Yeah. We all do if you're in a leadership position. So, hey, Naomi, I don't want anything. Other people might want stuff from me. I don't. Mm-hmm. And that kind of is mm-hmm. liberating. Dave, what would you say?
If there's one thing I would say, remind your friends that they can find encouragement where God is. Take them there. Don't just simply just remind them and leave them and let them be. Go with them. There's something that Ruth did going with Naomi back to the place where there was rumor that God was moving, that God had returned and brought a blessing again to the land. And so they could find bread. They could find provision. Go back with your friend to where you know that both of you can find encouragement from God. And remind your friend, you can find encouragement and identity and satisfaction in and through God. I didn't think something happened to Ruth in the process of being married to Chili, the guy who whose meaning meant finding perfection or completeness in a relationship with God, that we can find satisfaction in a relationship with God that goes deeper than our circumstances. Even when our circumstances make us look at ourselves and we're walking with a limp and we're walking through it, no human should have to experience. Walk with them. Keep reminding them that you can find goodness in God. Mm-hmm. And keep seeking God's presence together.
So the point of the book of Ruth is, when you get to the end, it is to reveal some of the genealogy of David.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And to say, you know, Ruth is now the great-great-grandmother, the grandmother of David. And so you have this divine plan that is at work in all of this. But here's the deal. Naomi and Ruth didn't know that in the moment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And whenever we deal with grief and loss, you know, the instinctive question is why. Well, within their own lifetimes, they never understood why. But these events would put into motion the things that would bring about the greatest king that Israel ever knew to the throne.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they never knew those answers. And that's why when we're in the middle of grief or we're in the middle of loneliness, we're not going to understand why. But we do the next right thing anyway. I find myself saying that a lot lately.
Yeah, well, I had that in my notes too. When you're going through grief and you don't know what to do next, the next right thing is all that you can do.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And the Book of Ruth is such a beautiful book of just ordinary people living ordinary yet godly lives. And, you know, God doesn't make a huge dramatic, he doesn't make his presence known in this huge dramatic way in Ruth. But only in the choices that are made by his people, and that's exactly how we live today. You know, there's no way to know what the future is in store for us, and they live their lives so similarly to us, just not being able to know this bigger picture. And yet, you know, it's a story of themes of famine and harvest and loss and abundance, and the book ends with this beautiful picture of abundance where Naomi is holding her grandson and everyone is gathered around her. And this is, you know, the Book of Ruth is an Advent story. It's a story of hope and what God has for us in the future. And the story of hope for these two women, these two ordinary women, became the story of hope for all of their people and for all of humanity. And just what a beautiful picture of abundance that is for all of us.
I would talk about Boaz, but y'all are probably telling me I'm pronouncing his name wrong, too.
No, so. Boaz is pretty simple. You got
okay,
that.
I got
Ruth
that.
Also, that's spot on.
Oh, got it. All right. So I would encourage you, and the point of this teaching is, don't focus on your loneliness. I mean, we all have those lonely parts in our life. But as followers of Jesus, we are called to warn those who need to be warned, encourage those who need to be encouraged, help those who are weak, be patient with everyone. And then what follows is that great statement in 1 Thessalonians 5:16 and mm-hmm. 17 and 18. Rejoice always, pray continually, give thanks in all circumstances, And that could easily be seen in Ruth and Naomi's life. For this is God's will for you in Christ Jesus. Anything else y'all are just dying to say?
No.
Do we want to talk about anything else that will amaze and astound our listeners?
No.
Okay.
We really did it this time, guys.
We're done. We had it today. It was just an organic moment. I don't know what that means. But anyway, All right. I guess that we're done. So may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you. And may God grant you peace now and forever. Amen.
Amen.